Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is transportation for food, shopping, and medical visits. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and you. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Otto Lohs.
Still here.
And thank God. And we're having a wonderful conversation with Jessica Dunn, who is the Director of Social Work Services for the Hospice Care Network, and Kelly Tully, whose family is a major contributor to hospice on Long Island, and very specific, the Mary Ann Tully Hospice Inn. And we had a question that we're going to go back to Jessica with, but I just wanted to, in the brochure that Christina had sent out, and this is a quote from Mother Teresa, none of us, including me, I suppose she was talking about me personally, I'm not sure, ever do great things, but we can all do small things with great love, and together we can do something wonderful. And this conversation today is the epitome of that. The Tully family helping out, and Jessica organizing, et cetera, et cetera. Every piece of it is just a small part of the puzzle. But at the end of it, we have given somebody a peaceful end of life, and we have given the family some solace in the most terrible time of their life. So again, to both you ladies, it's just nothing but congratulations and thank you. Jessica, go back to what we were talking about.
Sure. So we were talking about visitation at the Hospice Inn.
Good. Which, I didn't remember that. Yeah. I hope you remember what we were talking about.
Yes. Which early on in the pandemic, our director at the Hospice Inn, Darren London, was very dedicated to trying to figure out a way that we could help to get some of these patients to us so their families could see them at end of life. So we took our first COVID positive patient, I think pretty early on in the pandemic, and, you know, kind of went through with the staff to make sure they were comfortable and they were safe and the PPE guidelines were all understood. You know, we were one of the first that allowed visitation. And not only for the COVID patients, it was also a concern for the patients that were there for, you know, other illnesses, because people were still dying in the height of the pandemic from other, you know, other illnesses. So it was important that they got visitation as well. So we started doing, of course, limited visitation, two people at a time for 2 hours a day. And then as things got safer, things opened up more. So it's really a great kind of partnership between the staff and the families to educate them and make them feel comfortable, to do the proper PPE, to be safe at the bedside. If families weren't able to be there present, and maybe they were sick themselves, or they were at a distance, they couldn't travel to see their loved one as they were dying, then our staff, especially our social work staff, would, you know, facilitate FaceTime calls or Zoom meetings with family members so people could see people in different ways. And then this, that kind of visitation was opened up in that model in some of our other units, in some of the hospitals, in some of the nursing homes, that if a patient was imminently dying, then they were allowed visitation.
Do you
get out of go?
Visitors is a subject that everybody handles things differently, and there are some people who don't handle things like this too well. Do you try to prime a visitor before they come in, you know, on maybe how they ought to try to behave, even though it's difficult? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been there and I've seen people do some really crazy things, and it doesn't help the patient. So I was just wondering what the thinking was on that.
So do you mean emotional reactions, things like that?
Yeah, well, somebody comes in and, you know, I understand people will be upset, because when you see people in hospice, typically they're not at the top of their game. Mm-hmm. And some people can handle that and some people can't. And they mm-hmm. probably do more harm with their visit than they do good. And I was just wondering if there's ever any thought given to, sure. You know, trying to kind of encourage people to try to control a little bit what they're doing when they're in there.
So I think sometimes those reactions that you're speaking about happen when the education maybe isn't there. You know, sometimes I think we misunderstand some of the practices we have at end of life. Someone mentioned morphine before. There's a lot of fear around morphine. Sometimes when we mention morphine to a family, they might get very upset. They might have a kind of adverse reaction. But the more we provide education and what the kind of intent is for something or the condition someone might be in, what's happening to their body, that can really help people to cognitively understand that then can help their emotional reaction to things. So we try to do that to kind of more empower people with the information and inform them of what they're going to see. And then that should help with, you know, letting them be present with that person as opposed to getting caught up in their head, wondering, what am I seeing? What's going on? How can this be happening? So we work really well as an interdisciplinary team at the Mary Ann Tully Hospice Inn and elsewhere in our network. But we try to really work with the nurse and social worker together and the chaplain to really provide that interdisciplinary support. So the doctor or nurse can say, this is medically what's going on. You know, the social worker and chaplain can pick that up emotionally and spiritually and see how the family's processing that.
You know, that was a great question. And Jessica, thank you. But at the same time, there comes a point where you can't control what people mm-hmm. do and say. And this is a true story. My father went to a wake years ago, and it was a woman's wake. And he went up to the son and said, your mother, when she was alive, was never a good looking woman, but they did a great job on her now.
Oh, boy.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
No.
And everybody in my family just cringed and said, oh, how would you say something like that? So, you know, I'm agreeing, you want the person to go in and be encouraging, but a person is still, they are who they are at the end of the day, unfortunately. And when I'm talking about that, I actually want to go back now to Kelly, in reference to, a little further in reference to the support that the Tully family is giving. And since you're the one it's on, I do want to give a shout out to your brothers and sisters. So you got to name them for me. I mean, I know their names, but that's besides the point.
You want me to name my brothers and sisters?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, Tommy's the oldest. Tommy, Joanne, Jimmy, Peter, Kenny, Alice, and me.
Perfect. No, and I mean, because the other thing that's so nice about it is it's a family. Okay. Yes. So, I mean, of the seven of you, it's not you and Peter or you and Kenny are deciding we should support this.
No.
It's a collective effort.
Yes. It was as you know, after my mother passed, my mother was on the board at hospice. And after she passed, my father took over her position. And when my father passed away, you know, we knew we were just going to continue supporting, you know, something that was so close to my mother and my father. You know, I think we will continue to support for as long as we possibly can. It's always been such a huge part of all of our lives. You know, since I was a young girl.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. And I know you and I know some of the story. I didn't know that. When did it become Mary Ann Tully?
When did they rename the inn?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 6 years ago, 7 years ago,
okay.
It was renamed. I think it was built when my mother, she had just passed. Cause I know she was very involved in opening it, but I think shortly after she had passed away.
Okay.
But you know, my family's, the golf outing itself to support hospice started in 1991. This year was the 29th year.
Oh, wow.
You know, I think my mother started it so that she could raise money so that there was, you know, they could do more, work and more, right. I'm trying to think of the name of, you know, they do so many things for children and so many, you know, that have lost their parents and, you know, things like that as well. So that there was more, funds to fund those programs.
Okay. No, because this one I really did read about, and there is so many I don't know what you're going to call it, but side programs that, you know, need be done. And the other thing too, and I have been involved in somewhat with nursing homes and hospices and stuff with what I do. But the Mary Ann Tully, it's almost decorated like a house. It's a very comforting environment.
Yes.
It's not sterile.
No. And the people are unbelievable, you know, in the care that they give these people that are, you know, passing. Both my parents were on hospice when they died, but they were at home.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, I, again, my opinion, if I was on hospice, I want to go to the facility. You know, that's just my opinion.
And I think
I'd rather.
Each his own.
I know. I agree. That's why we're friends. When the time comes, I'm going to call you. Like, get me in. Call Jessica. Get me in.
Who makes that decision, by the way?
Good point. I have no idea. Jessica?
Well, that is a medical decision. So hospice is a Medicare-based program. So we follow Medicare regulations. That's also who the major pay source is for hospice is Medicare. So that's there's several levels of care within hospice, and inpatient care, which is what the hospice in is one of those levels of care. So it's when a patient requires the kind of care that can't be provided at home, that's when it would be appropriate for them to be in something like the hospice in.
Now, that's either going to be in the hospice or the same amount of treatment. Or not treatment, the same care would be offered to them at home, excuse me.
Yes. So most
Am
of
I right
our
there,
patients.
Jessica?
Yes. Okay. Most of our patients, I'd say 95% of our patients are at home or what they determine to be their home. So that could be an assisted living or a nursing home or their home. And a lot of patients, you know, kind of might go back and forth. If they have a period of time where they're more symptomatic, they might go into the inn, let us kind of take care of them, make sure that their care can be managed at home, and then go back home. You know, that can work too. Some families are very dedicated to wanting to try to keep their loved one home, especially now with visitation and everything like that. Right. But, you know, some people are, you know, feel that they would like their loved one to die in facility. So we do our best to try and get, you know, align that with people's goals.
If you right. have at home, what are the hours typically? I guess it depends a lot on the condition of the patient, but like, what's the deal? Like, is it ever 24/7, 8 hours, 4 hours? How does that work?
So if you're talking about actual physical care, like an aid?
Well, somebody.
Or the hospice in general?
Well, and I guess that's really the question is, if it's hospice care at home, what does that mean? Does it mean you have somebody there all day, 8 hours, you know, whatever?
No, that's a great question, because that's another kind of misnomer about hospice. So like I said, hospice is a philosophy and it's a, you know, it's a way of care. So what we provide 24/7 is access to our medical team, access to medications, things like that. So if there's any sort of symptom that comes up, if there's anything that I always think our best services, you know, that 2 o'clock in the morning kind of thought in the back of your head, that you're like, oh, should I take him to the ER? Should I take him somewhere? You know, that doesn't sound great. You pick up the phone, you call us, a nurse can come see you in the middle of the night. You know, I think that's the best aspect, the best service that we offer in hospice. So it's not 24/7 physical care, but it's access to care 24/7.
But there would be some physical care if required with aides?
So the aid is usually there up to 4 hours a day.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's the maximum Medicare allows.
We got to take another break. This is tremendous. You're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back with both Jessica and Kelly.